Hello there. Today is Friday, November 15th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London in Washington. Coming up, how Americans are feeling about the impeachment investigation.
Is this what Americans should now expect from their president? If this is not impeachable conduct, what is?
Protests in Hong Kong turned to a violent phase. Also had a South African rapper's new song is named after a U.S. wrestler, and it has gone viral. It's all on today's International Edition. Congressional Democrats are now taking their impeachment case against President Donald Trump to the American public, hoping to shift public opinion that shows the country split on whether Trump should be removed from office in connection with alleged wrongdoing related to Ukraine in the 2020 U.S. election. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone files this report.
Do you swear or affirm that the testimony you are about to give is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
Two veteran U.S. diplomats, George Kent and William Taylor, were front and center as the impeachment hearings began. Taylor said the White House held back military aid to Ukraine for a time as part of a pressure campaign by the president to demand investigations into rival Joe Biden.
To withhold that assistance for no good reason other than help with the political campaign made no sense.
Democratic Congressman Adam Schiff said that alleged conduct fits the constitutional standard of high crimes and misdemeanors that warrants impeachment.
Is this what Americans should now expect from their president? If this is not impeachable conduct, what is?
Republicans said the witness testimony about the president's actions was second and third hand, and that Ukraine eventually got the military aid. Congressman Devin Nunes said the impeachment inquiry is part of a long-standing Democratic plot to bring down the president.
Anyone familiar with the Democrats' scorched earth war against President Trump would not be surprised to see all the typical signs that this is a carefully orchestrated media smear campaign.
Trump has repeatedly said the Democrats have no case.
There's never been a president who's been so transparent. This is a witch hunt at the highest level, and it's so bad for our country.
Democrats hope that the televised hearings will build public support for their case against the president, says legal analyst Susan Lowe Block.
This is not a situation where the House and the Senate would remove someone because they don't like him. That would be wrong, and that's not what is at issue here. But it is also at the same time a political process that has to have the public behind them.
Public opinion polls show the country remains deeply split on the impeachment issue, says analyst Ramesh Ponuru.
I think it remains to be seen what impact impeachment is going to have on the 2020 election. Right now, it is just solidifying the opinions of supporters of each party.
As the hearings move on, Democrats will need to build a bipartisan case for impeachment, says analyst John Fortier.
For a president to be removed means that both parties, a significant part of both parties, have to agree to that. And so I think for Democrats, they're going to want to see a lot more movement in public opinion. Maybe that will happen over the course of an investigation, but it certainly hasn't moved tremendously.
I have never been a quitter.
Richard Nixon resigned the presidency in 1974 when his support plummeted in public opinion polls.
I wanted to be legal without being particularly helpful.
Bill Clinton survived a Senate impeachment trial in 1999 when much of the public rejected Republican efforts to remove him from office. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Here are some of the stories we're following at voanews.com. President Trump asks the Supreme Court to block a subpoena for his tax returns. China ends a ban on U.S. poultry imports seeking meat during a pig disease crisis. Estonia's minister says Russian security services have used Estonia to fund activities abroad. And Thailand's toxic herbicide ban could leave farmers unprepared. Find expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Hong Kong's pro-democracy protests entered a new, more violent phase this week following the death of a young protester. VOA's Bill Gallo reports on how the semi-autonomous Chinese territory's 24-week-old protest movement is changing.
Hong Kong's protests may be smaller these days, but they're more violent, more frequent, and more unpredictable. Police crack down faster and firmer than ever. Last week saw the first death of a student protester. But 5 months in, Hong Kong's leaders still refuse to give in to the protesters' political demands.
I'm making this statement clear and loud here. That will not happen.
This week has seen an increase in hardcore protesters destroying public infrastructure, pro-Beijing businesses or individuals have also been attacked. In some neighborhoods, the fight between police and protesters now resembles a battle for territory. The more aggressive tactics could be an attempt to reclaim international attention, says activist Edward Yu.
Right, for such a small city, trying to fight against an authoritarian regime, so we need international support, which probably can explain why in the past 4 days protesters in Hong Kong insist to have a stronger say and would like to have more severe action so as to arouse international concern.
Even with the more aggressive tactics, polls suggest the protesters still have widespread public support. But the violence isn't without critics.
Demanding five things, or we will burn down your railway stations on a regular basis. You know, is not going to end happily anywhere in the world.
Steve Vickers is the former head of the Royal Hong Kong Police Criminal Intelligence Bureau.
This movement has come off the rails and is really out of control. And the violent element of it, or the sharp end of it, are destroying the message that the rest of them had established through large demonstrations which were peaceful.
But many argue peaceful protests weren't working. And with China's authoritarian Communist Party closing in, many protesters have decided they won't give in without a fight. The problem is only made worse by Hong Kong's inaction, says former lawmaker Emily Lau.
We are calling on everybody to calm down, to dial down, to de-escalate. But to do that, the Hong Kong government has to give something. You cannot just tell them, oh, you are protesters, go home. I'm not going to give you anything. Crazy. Look at the way things are. They're not going to react.
Both sides turning more violent, with no solution in sight. Bill Gallo, VOA News.
Meanwhile, Frances Hugh is a journalism student at Boston's Emerson College, and she is originally from Hong Kong. While home as a teenager, she took part in organized protests. One day while riding a bus, a passenger asked her where she was from, and she replied, Hong Kong. She says the passenger got enraged and insisted she should define herself as, quote, from China, adding that she was Chinese and should fix her identity. Well, as an aspiring journalist, she wrote an article in the college newspaper entitled, quote, I am from Hong Kong, not China. She opened with the line, I am from a city owned by a country I don't belong to. The article went viral, and so did reaction to what she had written. VOA Asia's Ira Melman had a chance to talk to the young lady on Skype about the experience.
The whole school read it because it's on the paper. So at first I got a lot of, you know, positive comments from my friends, but then mostly all the negative comments or like the backlash are from the Chinese international student community, and it starts circulating in their chat groups. And then at one point, three of the journalism students from China decided to write like kind of like a response, like a letter to the editor in response to my article, saying how my article is biased, some of the information is not true. And I find their, I think it's a good way to, you know, it's a good approach to write in response to my article instead of having, you know, a very crazy confrontation. I think it's a good approach. At one point, I remember it was at night that I saw someone shared my article on Facebook and his profile changed. He changed his profile into with like the Chinese national flag. And then his bio line says, like, no matter how far, like, whoever opposes my greatest China, no matter how far they are, they must be executed. And I know that it's like right away, I know that he's referring to me because he changed that after my article was published. And he did all the changes, like the, you know, the Chinese flag and all those things. And he shared my article after my article was published. So I was very, you know, knowing that that person is an Emerson student really give me a panic. It's because I know like Emerson is a very small school and we also have like mutual friends.
Have you heard from other Hong Kong natives who are in the United States about similar situations?
Yeah, I think it's actually really usual that, you know, students from Hong Kong or Taiwan, they got their friends or like their classmates' opposition because of what they talked about the political situation in between. But it's not very usual that it gets to a point that you would get, you know, death threats or that much, you know, hate comments. But definitely I have heard of people sharing their stories and they often feel really frustrated and they don't, you know, dare to speak up again because of these kind of passive aggression, I guess.
Well, do you think it's organized, this opposition to you?
I mean, specifically in my case, I know that they talked about me in, you know, a very big chat group, like online group. But I wouldn't say, you know, they organized it to, you know, make me feel bad. But definitely they are a very bonded, you know, community that, you know, they all feel the same when they saw my article, I guess.
Have you been in touch with other people who support the protest or have taken part in the protest and have received the kind of backlash that you have?
So in August, I organized a rally and it was totally under a great threat. You know, us as a collective group was totally under a great threat from doing this rally, and we got counter protest on the other side. Somebody from the crowd, like from the counter side, coming to our side and try to destroy our stuff. They push our audio system, and then one of the guy even tailed me back to school after the rally. So I would say it's like something constantly happening to the Hong Kong community.
That's Frances Hui. She is a journalism student from Hong Kong studying at Boston's Emerson College, speaking with VOA Asia's Ira Melman. Football in Ghana, as in most Africa, is the most loved sport, but the beautiful game has been tarnished by widespread corruption uncovered in 2018. The scandal led to league game suspensions and some football clubs closing their doors. But one club that stayed open is not only promoting football, it's also working to keep young men off the streets. Stacey Knott reports from Accra.
Ghanaian football was stunned last year by a corruption scandal in which referees were found to be accepting bribes to influence the outcome of games. But while the Ghana Football Association has struggled to clean up the sport and some football clubs have closed their doors, the Shooting Stars Football Club has continued to train, house and support young players. Isaac Unser is co-founder of the Shooting Stars.
From a very small way, we're trying to make sure that football is still being played. In the last 2 years, most clubs in Ghana have shut shop. Why? Because you can't keep on spending money on something that is not being supported. It's not running. So footballers are sitting at home. What are they doing if they're sitting at home? They're going to get into trouble. They're going to be on the streets.
The scandal spurred many Ghanaian football players to take other jobs or leave the country for other clubs. But with donations from the founders' friends, family, and some businesses, the Shooting Stars were able to help footballers like 17-year-old Emmanuel Chibafor keep training in Ghana.
All the environment are just good for a footballer. So you don't need to go outside to try and figure out, like, going to look for money. Like, they have all the, like, food stuffs and all the facilities around there. So you don't need to go outside the country.
The team has helped the young men do well in exhibition games in Europe, even though many are from less privileged backgrounds with far fewer resources than their European counterparts. Some European clubs have even signed Shooting Stars footballers. Part of reforming the GFA was finding a new president. Ghanaian attorney Amanda Clinton was the only woman to run, though she was unsuccessful in her bid. Clinton says it is important to make sure all talented players have a good shot at success in the game.
Football has been a really good leveler, you know, globally. It's like the gladiators of our time. It's been a very good leveler for some, for disadvantaged people, where it makes a difference.
Shooting Stars co-founder Ansa says young players need more support. He wants to further develop the Shooting Stars both on the field and through education. His ultimate aim will be to see a handful of his players in the international spotlight and better support for players who stay in Ghana. Stacey Knott for VOA News, Accra.
And you're listening to International Edition, back in a minute.
Voice of America's news, talk and music programs are now at the tip of your fingers. Find everything at www.voaafrica.com. Listen to VOA's program lineup live anytime, day or night. Pick out your favorite shows and listen anytime you want. Download our podcasts. Check VOA Mobile from your cell phone. Subscribe to VOA Newsfeed. VOAnews.com.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
VOA's International Edition continues. Well, we've heard about baby boomers, millennials, Gen Xers, and now we have Gen Z. They are the ones now entering the workforce. A new study finds that while they are worried about job security, this generation is also overwhelmingly purpose-driven. The report issued by the nonprofit education organization Girls with Impact, with the support of the S&P Global Foundation, finds that Gen Zers want a future centered on world change and innovation. Joining us to talk about the study's findings is Girls with Impact CEO Jennifer Openshaw. Thank you for being with us. So certainly this generation faces a whole new set of issues they'll have to deal with. Tell us about your report's findings.
Well, number one, that it's no longer just about earning a paycheck. Gen Z more than ever really is looking for purpose in their workforce. And I think part of that is, look, they're grappling with some pretty major issues, from the environment to crises. They read the headlines every day, mm-hmm. and they are saying loud and clear that I want to help drive world change, mm-hmm. and I want to do it in my work. And if I can't, then I want to go do it as my own boss, if you will. So we asked them, what are the big concerns that are worrying you? And while they're concerned about being successful and getting a job, we're also finding that the majority of them want to drive that world change and drive innovation. And so that's really an important message for employers to keep in mind as they think about how are they going to attract this next generation.
I know there are some concerns as well. What are some of their top worries?
You know, it's really surprising that aside from being successful and getting a job, mental health ranked third. And it's interesting because I think in the past, mental health was really pushed aside. We didn't talk about that in society. But now they're saying, we see it every day. We talk about it. We see it in the Girls with Impact program, by the way, with the ventures that some of them create, ventures to actually address stress and depression. So I think the message here to schools and the parents is that we need to pay attention to mental health, and we need to make sure there's an outlet for high school teen kids to be able to deal with their stress and depression.
Did they talk about what is causing the stress and depression?
No, we just asked what their biggest worries are, and mental health was among them. But we know from our own experience in dealing with these teen girls that it's an issue that comes up quite a bit. I mean, we hear it from their own family sort of struggles, but also in the business ideas that they come up with in the program. These are ideas that emanate from their peer interactions. They're seeing their peers dealing with stress and depression. They're saying, I want to help them, and so therefore I'm going to come up with an idea that's going to help tackle that problem. And this generation is a very problem-solving driven generation. They're looking to come up with those answers to these big questions, big issues that they're not seeing policy leaders deal with, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I understand that also uncovered some gender gaps.
Yeah, I think the big three areas that really stood out, difference between men and women, are compensation, their view of themselves and becoming a leader, and entrepreneurship. So men are more likely to become a leader, to run their own company, and to see themselves as getting a bigger paycheck. Probably the good news there is that the women were not that far behind. And our view is that, you know, if we just train them earlier to build that sense of confidence, to give them those skills to negotiate, to understand the business landscape, it's hopefully they'll start to surpass men in the years to come. You know, we also found that women and transgender and gay populations are more concerned about mental health and the environment than men. So I think those populations who've been traditionally in the minority, if you will, we want to change society, we want to change culture, and that came through in the report as well. What also was really interesting, I think, is what are some of the things that are driving their thinking about their future jobs is because this generation is so purpose-driven, they're looking for jobs where they're going to have a direct impact. In the past, it used to be, let's provide opportunities to our employees to give to others, to maybe volunteer, but they want something that's much more tangible. 65% of them want to make a difference directly to a cause they care about. 60% said they want to actually create something innovative or world-changing. And so what this means for employers is that they need to bring this next generation into those opportunities to innovate.
All right. That is Girls with Impact CEO Jennifer Openshaw. You can find out more at girlswithimpact.com. We thank you so much for being with us. While recently performing on the Kelly Clarkson Show, South African rapper Sho Madjozi revealed to Clarkson that she would love to meet the U.S. wrestler John Cena, who she has named her most popular song after. And then suddenly, without warning, Cena showed up and walked on stage.
I've been in WWE a long time, almost 20 years, and you forget the impact that you have on people. And hearing that song, I'm like, you're cool. I'm not.
No.
Sho Madjozi explained to Clarkson why she named the song after Cena.
I grew up in a very rural area, Limpopo in South Africa, and there was one television in my village while we were growing up, and we got to watch two TV shows. One was a local drama called Generations, and the other one was wrestling. And
that's amazing!
Yeah, so if I didn't go by Sho Madjozi, I would have gone by John Cena, probably. That's the name, but then that's already someone's name, so I didn't... Yeah,
you
but I love
feel
it.
It. Yeah. I love it. I love it.
And I made this song because it's really like about, you know, because John Cena always used to say, you can't see me. Mm-hmm. So when we used to play wrestling with my cousins, I used to pretend to be John Cena.
Madjozi's song John Cena has received rave reviews locally and internationally.
Treat me like a criminal. Hey, we were just together though, on the same line. Why press into them? Some man I have a rough like John Cena. Some man I get buff like John Cena. He used to be cool.
Oh, you've been listening to International Edition. That does it for our show today, but you can always find us at voanews.com. We thank you for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Tony Pollock. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
You guys. Astronomers spotted a star traveling at an incredibly fast 6 million kilometers per hour, or 10 times faster than most stars. According to the astronomers, the star called S5HVS1 once had a companion as part of a binary system, but the two stars wandered too close to Sagittarius A star, the supermassive black hole at the center of the galaxy. About 5 million years ago, the intense gravity of the giant black hole swallowed the companion star but flung S5HVS1 outwards on an ultra-fast journey. The star was discovered with the Anglo-Australian Telescope, and the European Space Agency's Gaia satellite helped the astronomers gauge its speed and trace its trajectory back to the center of the Milky Way. At its current speed, the star is expected to exit the galaxy in about 100 million years from now, never to return. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5 minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Next, an international public service announcement by the United States government.
It's been more than 12 years since Robert Levinson disappeared from Kish Island in Iran. Through its Rewards for Justice program, the State Department is now offering a reward of up to $20 million for information leading to his safe location, recovery, and return. A retired FBI special agent, Mr. Levinson, went missing during a business trip to Kish Island on March 9, 2007. Following his retirement in 1998, he had worked as a private investigator. Since his disappearance, his whereabouts and well-being have been unknown. In a statement announcing the award, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Mr. Levinson was taken hostage in Iran with the involvement of the Iranian regime, and Secretary Pompeo noted that he is the longest held hostage in U.S. history. The Rewards for Justice program is administered by the U.S. Department of State's Diplomatic Security Service. Since its inception in 1984, the program has paid in excess of $150 million to more than 100 people. If you have information about Robert Levinson, please contact the nearest U.S. embassy or consulate, the FBI, or email info@rewardsforjustice.net. Absolute confidentiality is assured, and relocation may be available.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.
Hey,
sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil.